Man, you cannot stop listening to one of the greatest anglers in the world right there, Brian Thrift. Welcome back to Bass University Live, everybody. We're going to have another one of the greatest anglers in the world, Ott DeFoe, on here in just a minute.
He just sent me a message, said, are we East Coast or West Coast time? So I guess he's ready to go.
I guess he is ready to go. Well, you let me know when he's ready. And I just want to give a shout out to a good friend of ours. We work with Tackle Warehouse, the Bass University Tackle Shop sponsor. You know, backed by Tackle Warehouse, and we lost one of ours. Corey Schmidt lost his wife Tara to battling cancer, and I just want to let him know that my thoughts and prayers are with him. All of our thoughts and prayers from the Bass University are with you, buddy. That's an incredible difficulty that you're going through right now. We are with you, and we're sending you prayers. We're sending you thoughts, and wishing you all the best, buddy. Our friend over at Tackle Warehouse. But, guys, I want to, we got a lot of other stuff going on at Bass University. If you guys aren't aware of our on-water training program, I want to invite you guys to go over to thebassuniversity.com and check that out. We have on-water trainers around the country that are there, to help you do on-the-water training. No matter whether it's tournament scenarios or whether it's learning how to pitch and flip and get started in this awesome sport of ours, we've got some of the greatest trainers in the world available over at thebassuniversity.com. So I want to invite you guys to go over and check that out and take advantage of some of the on-water training programs. I'm one. I work here on the Chesapeake, and I work with a lot of you guys, and I appreciate you and look forward to working with a lot of you guys this year. Do we have Ott up and ready to go?
We do.
Outstanding. I think I see him up there on the screen.
He says thumbs up.
he's a good buddy of mine. He's been with us, like I said, at the Bass University for a long time. He's put the beat down on me on Douglas Lake more than a couple times. And it's good to see him. And I'm going to be cheering him on at the Classic, the great Ott DeFoe. How are you, buddy?
I'm good. Pretty good. How are you doing?
Man, I'm doing good. I wish I was fishing the Classic with you. I know it's going to be tricky with all that water, but it's got to be exciting getting ready for that Derby.
Yeah, it certainly is. Yeah, you've been there and you've experienced what the Classic's about. Yeah, it is. There's a lot of mayhem that goes on Classic Week leading up to it and everything. But no, it is very, very exciting for us here at the DeFoe House, because as you can see, there's Jenny.
Hey, Jenny.
Home. I mean, we're sitting here in front of the fire here on the couch at home. So that's something I've never got to do, for a Classic. Certainly not a lot of people get to, so get to have it at home for you.
Are you going to be sleeping in your own bed during this tournament?
The whole time, yep.
That's so cool.
Yeah. I'm 30 minutes from takeoff downtown. For me, so 30 minutes, that's certainly worth staying at home for, no longer of a drive than that is.
Yeah. Well, I guess you got to be feeling a lot of pressure. You got to be getting tired of talking to people like me.
Well, there's nobody quite like you, Pete. I did two different TV interviews today. I actually had so many TV interviews going on that I had to send my stunt double. Skylar Hamilton went and did one for me with the Fox News station. It saw a post. Somebody shared it with us. It had him being interviewed, but they had my name on the screen. So I guess he was my stunt double for that interview. But no, but it has been busy. But tomorrow practice will start and answering the phone will end, and it'll be all about game time.
That's awesome. Well, I can appreciate what Skylar went through there, because this is my own show here, this own web show, and hardly ever do I get my name correct up on the screen.
yep, it happens.
But yep. we got people that are dying to talk to you. We all of our subscribers, I know you've been with us at Bass U, you've been all over the country with us, Ott, and they're dying to ask you some questions, and we're going to fire
right.
We're going to start right off and let
Let's
you answer a few
question that we have came in from Eric J. And Eric J. wants to know, Ott, how do you transition from the MLF events to the traditional events like the Classic?
Eric, thanks for the question. Great question. It is, just kind of looking back at what we've been doing, most of our major league events have been up into the season. So it was easy to unplug. You go to one of those events, you're fishing out of their boats. you know, all that kind of stuff. So it was very vastly different. Where this year we have fished two major league fishing events. They've been in our own boats. It's not been in the dark. It's been kind of a regular prep in our own boat. But then with the major league fishing having an official every fish counting, da-da-da-da-da. So I don't know yet because I've not really had to do it. I am very concerned that I may weigh a fish and then immediately release it, that I may not come in at all. Because I'm waiting for my official to tell me lines out. These are concerns that I have, but I'm going to try to do my best. Remember to keep fish, to only keep five, and to come in when.
Man, this is really confusing. I can't imagine. That's got to be. I hadn't really thought about it like that, man. You're out there fishing. You're battling along. You look at your watch. You're not due until 3 o'clock. It's 10 minutes to three. You think you got 10 minutes left.
Right, exactly. You know, because that's what we do with Major League Fishing, the Bass Pro Tour, whatever. But like I said, the events we fished in the past, it was easy because we're in their boats. You know, it's easy to unplug and plug into what we were doing there. But having had a couple events in our own boats, it's going to make that a lot easier to confuse, you know. So hopefully there'll be enough other excitement going on around it, and I think there will be to remember, hey, don't forget you got to be in at 3:40 or 4 o'clock, whatever check-in time's going to be.
Yeah, no kidding. That would be a bad deal if you forgot.
It'd be a real bad deal.
We'll be pulling for you to get that one right.
And Jim would not be happy if I messed that up.
Alarm. All kinds of alarms.
Yeah. That's a good idea.
Yeah.
Get your Siri going on your iPhone. And
yes, exactly.
Get everybody activated.
Yeah.
Are you going to be doing anything different? Like, I mean, are you practicing a different way? Or are you going to be tackling?
You're asking Jenny. Because what you mentioned there a minute ago, with the conditions being jacked up, really, you know, I mean, we've had so much rain it's been wet here for 2 or 3 months now. But it's been very abnormal conditions for this part of the country. It had been fairly warm, honestly, and a lot of rain and stuff. But in a sense, it's cooled off a lot here in just like the last 4 days. We've had this Arctic plunge that a lot of people have, lows in the teens, highs in the 30s. I'm sure that's knocked the water temperatures back some. And then we've got more rain actually coming in tomorrow, going to be cold rain. But then it's supposed to be 60 on Saturday and rain more then, and then kind of get nicer throughout the week. So it's going to be a lot of adjustment between what we see tomorrow and what we see a week from tomorrow.
Well, I just, guy asked that question about what to do in this condition. And, you know, I told him, you know, the most common thing that I've run into is, man, you look for the most stable water, probably down by the dam a little bit. If it's that muddy, if it's that cold, that's the most common adjustment. Is it that muddy there where you're going to have to do that kind of stuff?
It has definitely gotten a lot better in like the last 3 days, you know, because we've actually had about 3 days of dry weather. And that's the thing about this system, is that it has so much current going through it right now that it will flush out pretty quick. You know, I mean, the lakes upstream of these lakes aren't, you know, they aren't as dirty. Cherokee, Douglas, Fontana over on the Teleco side, all those lakes are fairly clean down by the lower end where the water's coming out of them. So that water that's flowing into here really isn't terribly bad at its source. But then once you get all the feeder creeks and everything else dumping in, that's where all the color comes from. So, you know, you get a big rain, the next day it's going to be muddied up. The next day it might be a little worse, but then it's going to start clearing pretty quick after that because that water upstream actually is clear. So with so much current flushing through the system, it's going to wash out quicker. If it was more still and not as much current flushing through, then it would sit there a little while longer and you'd have kind of that muddy water just to stay there and deal with. But yeah, it's really there'll be sections. The way I expect it to end up being, you may run through a 5 mile stretch of the lake that looks pretty good, and then the next 5 mile stretch might be really bad nasty, and then the next 5 mile stretch might be different looking, and then tomorrow it's going to shift down. It's all going to shift down the river some. So it's you're going to have kind of a rainbow effect of watercolors. I think
I see Riz firing. Now, everybody that we use your question on the air, we got all kinds of cool stuff. We got some Arashi stuff. We're giving away some Rapala DT stuff.
Good.
BTC was telling me you might bring some stuff to give away tonight to the table. Is that true?
Yeah, absolutely. We'll have to have it shipped out and stuff. But Jenny, I'm going to use my model here now. Ooh. So show them. we've got a booth set up. So if you're coming to the expo, booth 5500, we'll have Ott Defoe hats, Ott Defoe shirts for sale there in the booth. So be sure to come by and check out the booth. And we'll have this shirt and some with the Otter logo, the one that I usually have. So be sure to come by the booth. But yeah, we'll figure us out a way to give away a shirt and a hat or something, or a couple of each, and we'll be sure to do that.
You pick the best question you like while you're on with us, and we'll hook them up with your stuff.
Perfect.
How's that?
That'll work.
What do you got, Riz?
This question's from Derek. Hey, Pete or Ott, do you think the upcoming moon phase will affect the outcome of the classic next week? The upcoming moon phase.
Moon phase question.
Okay, that's a good question. The upcoming moon phase, I don't really see how it would, because these fish aren't anywhere near spawning yet. Most of our fish in East Tennessee, most of the lakes around, our spawn typically starts around the middle of April and will last through about the middle of May is when most of our spawning takes place. I've seen some as late as early June, but most all of it is done between middle of April and middle of May. So to me, I don't really see the moon phase happening a lot outside of the spawn. I've never understood how it affects bass. I know it does in some way or another, sometimes with what the crawfish are doing and that kind of stuff, but I've never been able to figure it out. I have to fish whether it's a full moon, a new moon, or an old moon.
With all this new water into the water system, maybe the moon will create a high tide and low tide situation.
It could. It might have more to do with that guy up there pushing the button that says more water or less water coming through the dams. But yeah, it could have. It is kind of a tidal effect in some way. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. With respect to moon phase, we deal with that all the time, and I've seen the moon really drive them on the beds. But most of the time, I think, it's length of day that drives them to the spawn, and the weather conditions that are overwhelmingly unstable right now, no matter what that moon's doing, even if they were thinking about spawning in that region. And like you said, we're still a ways away from that in normal conditions. So.
Yeah.
I would think that would probably be a minimum impact on the spawn situation or what's happening out there.
We noticed on the way in, all the Canadian geese are paired up.
Are they?
As we're coming across the field here, every one of them is flying off in pairs.
Is that their season? Oh, is that what they do right now?
They're getting ready to do things.
Yeah.
Get in there.
Well, I know the fish, like I said, the weather will totally mess them up, but, as the season comes, the length of day comes, man, the springtime action will start happening. What do you got, Riz?
I got a question from Mike P. Ott, do you think the abnormal conditions give you an advantage or a disadvantage?
That's a great
relative
question.
Relative to the other non-local competitors.
Yeah, Mike, you're gonna be the first winner of a shirt and a hat.
Yeah.
Noted.
Because I think it's both. I truly feel like if I can grasp what's going on, it should work in my favor. I felt like initially I was like, man, I missed my chance of this being a normal event and the water being as it should be and conditions being as they should be. But at the same time, if I can get something figured out and get something dialed in, and Pete, this, anybody who's fished a lot, once you get the beginnings of a pattern, you figure out, okay, here's what the fish are doing. These are the type of places they're set up on. The next thing you need to do is find as many places that fit that pattern as you possibly can. And that's what I expect this event to be, is a pattern. I mean, that's kind of the way this lake is. It's a pattern type of fishery. It's not a spot or a single location that's going to carry you through. So having that thought process, it's if I can figure out that pattern quickly on any given day, then I should be able to run that pattern better than anyone else on the water because of my knowledge of the water and knowing, okay, this place right up here sets up just like this and I can go there and this is going to be set up that way. So in some ways it wipes out the local advantage, these abnormal conditions of thinking, I've got this place in the bag. I know I can go there. I know I can count on that spot. I know I can count on this. I have to go figure out what's going on. But once I do figure it out, I'll be able to duplicate it, hopefully, quicker than anyone else.
Great question.
Mike Lancanelli wants to know, where will the Classic be won?
In the water.
Does he win? Does he get a prize?
Yep.
So Ott, we got another good one, I think, that came in from Brooks Parker. Which are affected more by the high muddy water, smallmouth or largemouth?
That is a good question. He's not going to win a prize, but that...
sorry, bro.
But anyway, too.
He'll win a prize from us. That's all right. We'll hook him up.
Jenny's lobbying back there.
I'm just harsh, I guess. Jenny would send the prize to everybody. But that is a great question, and I really pretty equally. I feel like, you know, I think that they will. I think they'll be pretty equally. Changed by it, because the smallmouth are, you know, I guess it would probably affect the smallmouth more, because the largemouth traditionally live in the areas of the lake that are going to already be somewhat off colored, just generally speaking. But I think that it will affect them both considerable, but probably the smallmouth a little bit more and put them out of their normal routine than what it will the largemouth, I'd have to say.
Well, I want to chime in here, because this is a Bass University secret, tidbit, okay, that I've learned, and this is a different kind of body of water. But I fish around smallmouth and largemouth fisheries a lot, mm-hmm, and this is a little sneaky sneak on the high water. The smallmouth bite better,
yeah,
and the low water the largemouth bite better. Ah. A little sneaky sneak. So when you're tidal water fishing and you're on multi-species, you hunt those green ones on the around the low tide. But when that tide floods and you lose that largemouth bite completely, you can bet that those brown fish are chomping.
I'll keep that in mind on August the 10th.
it affects, you know, our lakes. They're not tidal because it's affected by the moon, but it is kind of the same because of the dams and stuff. It just doesn't change necessarily twice a day. But, you know, when that water does come up, a lot of times it's exactly like a high tide where those largemouth can kind of get away from you, where the smallmouth will go from wherever they've been, who knows, to actually where they're catchable. You know, so it does sometimes affect them in a similar kind of way. Right. In this scenario, the largemouth, the lake's not flooded, so the largemouth can't get away from you. But it just maybe it'll put a few more smallmouth into play. Maybe it won't. They may not like it whatsoever. But yeah, it could possibly put them into play a little bit easier.
Well, I find that all the lessons that I've learned over the years don't apply to my classic tournaments. Nothing works. Nothing ever works for me.
Yeah.
But it works for you. My goodness, every classic year seems like you're in contention to win.
I've had a blessed string of finishes for sure in the Classic. It's been good. It's never been great though, but I have had some really, really good finishes in the Classic, and had myself to where I was within a bite, you know, one bite a few times to have made a different outcome, but never lost that bite. I've just been a bite that I didn't get, but I enjoy the Classic. It is a very hectic week. But certainly a fun one.
Well, I think I might, you know, give Jenny some credit for that, getting you prepared for the Classic. And got to ask, you know, what's your, you know, because this is about tournament preparation. What she got you doing? Are you doing like push-ups in the morning? Are you eating clean? You know, are you training 6 miles a day? What she got you doing?
Not much. Yeah, she's over here dying laughing. Nothing out of the ordinary.
Let's see. Donuts for breakfast.
Yeah, she brought me a couple of donuts home from a grocery store yesterday morning.
That sounds like an Ike and Ellie pattern. Yeah, donuts.
Yeah. Cooked a bunch of wings on the grill here a little bit ago. Me and Andy chowed them down. Andy Montgomery staying with us here this week. I would have him up here and have him on, but he had to run go get something for his GPS or something. Just make sure we eat good, especially since we're home.
Nice. Well, I mean, but seriously, what is your classic prep look like? Map study, lure preparation? I mean, what's that look like for you?
I do. It is an event. I do typically always spend more time on bait prep than the rest of the year probably combined. You know, I don't think it's any secret to say that people, and myself included, expect a crankbait to be a big player in this event. And I've spent a lot of time in the last few weeks. You know, I've got some baits custom painted and, you know, stuff that I've gotten done in the last few weeks just to be ready for this event, because I expect that to be a player. And I probably do that more so for this event every year than I do any of them. This one, you know, being at home, I didn't have to go spend a lot, or I didn't have to spend a lot of time, you know, on Google Earth and that type of stuff, because I've seen the lake at, you know, every level, every water stage, basically, other than flooded. And thankfully it's not going to be that during the event, it doesn't look like. But I did spend a couple of days down there riding around before it went off limits, and I realized then that I'd never looked at the lake with side imaging. That's how long it's been since I've really spent much time on this body of water. I spent a ton of time on it, but all of it's been even pre-side imaging, really, to speak of. So you know, I did spend some time down there and you know, mark some places. But yeah, really, most classics, though, I would say the actual practice, I put very, very little stock in. Last year at Hartwell, I probably less than I ever have. I mean, we practiced, you know, ballpark 4 days for the classic, and at 9 a.m. on day one, I had nothing in the live well. And I said, I'm going to go to a part of the lake I have never been to before. I've always wanted to go, but I've never been there. And I fired up the motor and I ran the part of the lake I'd not practiced. I mean, I had never had any experience there whatsoever, other than looking at it on Google Earth. And I drove there. That's where I fished most of the rest of the event. So the way the practice is spread out, if it's on a lake that you don't know well and the conditions change so much, I mean, you almost just have to take it a day at a time.
Man, that's bold to be able to just pack your bags and do it. Do you think at this, you know, this is a local body, it's going to be awful hard for you to do that, because do you think history could wind up hurting you here?
It can, for sure. It absolutely can. Yeah, because it's I do have so much knowledge of, you know, I've caught a fish here and I've caught fish there. And especially here, the majority of my knowledge is around this time of year. So on Fort Loudoun Tellico Lakes, on the last Saturday in March, the first Saturday in April, and then the first Saturday in May, from the time I started tournament fishing until through now, there has always been a big tournament that those three Saturdays, last Saturday in March, first in April, last one in May. So I spent a lot of time there from the middle to the end of March, and then some time around May especially. But it was every single year we'd have those events. And so I have a lot of experience just a little bit later than what we're here. Depending on the year, a lot can change in that week or so, or 10 days, but sometimes it not a whole lot does. But yeah, so that's having all that history around this same time of year. It could help me or it could hurt me by luring me in and just saying, you know, man, you got to go hit, don't forget this place, don't forget that place. And before you know it, it's 1 o'clock and you're still fishing history.
Well, you know, you've been down this road enough times. I think you'll be able to, you know, make the right call when you need to. And it's interesting because what you said about side imaging, I did that similar to some of the bodies of water around here. And I found stuff. I'm like, oh, man, I did not know that was there this whole time. Did you have that experience?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that was stuff that I had, you know, and even the mapping that's out here now is so much better than what it ever. Oh. Here's Parker.
Yes, the parent
by Parker. Say hi, buddy. not buddy. Sleep good. But yeah, so I mean, the mapping is so much better than what we ever had. And even though you think you know a place, when you really look at it on, you know, on some good mapping, there's stuff that jumps out at you that you never knew was there. And even what amazed me was looking at places that I had caught a lot of fish, and there was either stuff that I didn't know was there whatsoever, or where I catch them, it's like, why do I catch fish there? You know, it really didn't make any sense as to why the place was so good.
Wow.
So that's makes you realize that, man, there's a lot of stuff we we fish by that, or we just run by that, that doesn't look like much on a map, but could be a, you know, could be a great place.
Wow, that's pretty amazing. I have a place I catch fish. I have no idea why now that I have side imaging. That's yeah. an amazing epiphany. What do you got, Riz?
Showtime 99 wants to know, Ott, how you're preparing differently for the Classic as opposed to an MLF event.
Not too terribly much. I mean, at this point, you know, as far as once I'm out on the water actually practicing, you know, with Major League Fishing, it's all about getting bites, you know, consistently. My goal, I don't always hit on it, but my goal in Major League Fishing is to catch a scoreable bass every 15 minutes. On one hand, it doesn't sound like that much, but the other hand, if you can catch one every 15 minutes, you're going to do pretty good. But in this, you just need to catch five for the whole day. So if you can get dialed in on the right pattern, you know, getting big bites obviously is more important than numbers of fish. And the thing to not forget about this event is that the size limit on, you know, a largemouth is 14 inch, which is a normal, respectable limit. On smallmouth, it's 18. And that's, you know, man, that's a big fish. That's a minimum 3-pounder out here on this system this time of year. So they're out there, and I mean, there's big ones, but man, if you can, you just got to figure out a way to catch enough of them.
Can you catch a limit of smallmouth? I mean, is there that much 18 inchers out there?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Actually the biggest bag I ever weighed in on Fort Loudoun Telico, we had 24 and a half and we had 4 smallmouth, and the largemouth we had was a 5.5-pounder. Hmm. I mean, we had a couple of smallmouth that were pushing 6 that day. So, and we actually come in second. The guys that won had 26 with 4 smallmouth and 1 largemouth. But yeah, there are, now you're probably not going to catch 10 keepers in a day, but 5, 6, you know, if you caught 7, you really smoked them.
Man, those are giant bags. Do you expect those bags to come in during the Classic?
Not those kind of bags, no. I mean, that was back when the lake was really, really in its prime. That was like early 2000s or so, and there was more 5, 6-pounders out there than what there seems to be, you know, like local events and stuff anymore, the kind of weights that are caught. I think you'll probably see a 20-pound bag, maybe 2, you know, possibly 2, but all in all, 17 and 18 is going to be really strong.
Excellent. What do you got, Riz?
We got kind of a jokester question from Mark in Nashville. If Ott had to choose between fishing Old Hickory Lake and cutting his own arm off, which would you choose?
Man, Mark, I don't hate Old Hickory. I know it's not everybody's friend, but yeah, I don't hate Old Hickory that bad. I fished the first time I ever fished there was in June in 2006 in an FLW series, and I had broken my left wrist and I was wearing a cast, and it was a very hot June week, and my cast smelled very bad, and when I cut it off I ended up having some scales in it, but I got a check in that event with a cast on one arm, so I've always liked Old Hickory.
Well, it's been good to you. Who was that, Mark?
Yeah, that was Mark. Yeah. In Nashville.
Mark, I would choose to cut my own arm off. I don't think I've ever caught a legal fish on Old Hickory the times we've been there.
if you're not, you weren't fishing shallow enough.
I guess you're right. I've seen that before, like 6 inches of water.
Yeah, but like if where they can lay on their side, if they can lay on their side and still be covered by water, it's deep enough.
Yeah, I could have used this information a few years ago.
Yep.
I get it now. I think that's where I've lost them. But yeah, that lake is challenging, so I can certainly appreciate what he's going through trying to fish it. What do you got, Riz? Yep.
We got we're gonna go ahead and kick off the Bass U battle. Ooh. Here. This question is gonna be for Ott and Pete. It's coming directly.
Define what the Bass U battle is.
The Bass U battle is all that, everything. We're battling.
This is new to me, too. I don't know what's going on.
So, anyway, moving on.
Well, we're going to ask a question to Pete and to Ott. Mm-hmm. It's a viewer-submitted question, and we're looking for... Yeah, well, this one's coming from Professional Fishhead, yeah, but straight after from the top. We're taking questions from the IM board. So, guys, send in your questions. It's a technique or scenario-specific question that we want to throw towards Pete and I and, you know, put you guys in that situation, and let's get your answer of what you would do under those conditions or with that question.
Okay.
And,
okay.
Yep.
And the question is as follows.
By the way, you know, I don't think it's – I'm like got to be the underdog in this battle. Well, we're, you know.
Yeah, we'll give you two scoreable bats.
Could you pick somebody else than Ott for me to have to go against?
We'll give you two keepers in your bag.
Yeah.
All right, I got two keepers.
And
Ott's
got his left arm sawed off.
What do we got? All right, so the question is, your top jig trailer for each season.
And begin.
And go. Pete, you're leading off. Your top jig trailer for each season.
I was hoping to critique Ott's answer.
Yeah.
Top jig.
We are.
Top jig trailer for each season. I keep it simple, man. I use something with less motion in the colder water and more motion in the bigger water. In the cold seasons, I like the – there's two Zoom trailers I use, the big salty chunk and the what's that other one? There's that other track. I can't even say the name.
Fred Albert?
No.
The super chunk.
Oss got it. I use those two typically in colder water seasons, and I go over to the pack-a-chunk, which I use an awful lot of in the warmer seasons. It's got a lot more action. That's not always the case, but that's generally what I do. Cold season, less motion. Warm season, more motion.
It's wide open.
Yeah, Pete's pretty. I mean, pretty spot on with that. For me, the chunk I use is a Bass Pro, but it's a very similar shape to a Super Chunk, and that's what I use. Except I use it almost all the time. I don't vary a lot from it. I'll use it in the summer. The main difference that I do from the cooler months to the warmer months is that in the cooler months I want a little bit smaller profile, so I'll thread that Super Chunk style chunk up on my jig, where in the summer I'm more likely to just hang it on the hook to where I have a bigger, longer profile. And then it'll kind of give it a little bit more action moving through the water. The only other time, and for some reasons, like some seasons or some years I use this a lot and some years I use it very rarely, but a lot of times in the fall, once you get like September, October, November, I like a heavy jig, like a 5/8 or a 3/4 ounce, and I use a twin tail grub trailer, especially fishing current. It seems like I like it's real thin. It will, you know, go through the water quickly, and that twin tail grub, it's got a faster, you know, fast action to it. And that you're fishing warmer water still, at least in our part of the country, September, October, a little bit into November, you know, when the water's warmer than 55 degrees or so, that I've had some great success on a twin tail grub trailer on the back of a jig.
Well, I have to say I got to award you some bonus points on your answer, unfortunately for me. Hey, I'll tell you one little tricky thing that I do, and this is pretty cool. I put together this kind of theory that in real cold water and real hot water, fish tend to act the same or very similar. They get weird. Yeah. And a lot of times I'll bring my wintertime trailers, my cold water trailers, and I'll use them in the summer, more less action. And it's weird that way, but you know, I'm trying to earn a few bonus points back by giving you that little tidbit.
That's exactly right. Yeah, and then not only warm water but also pressured areas. You know, places that's, I feel like in the summertime, that's why I kind of stick with that. With that same chunk without a whole lot of action, is 9 times out of 10 you're probably fishing around or behind somebody else who's using something like what you were using, Pete, you know, something with a whole lot of action behind it. So I tend to say with something a little bit more neutral and where it doesn't have quite as much aggressive action to it.
Shots fired.
He was agreeing with me, man.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
We were in water agreement on that term. He's the BTC's just checking in, you know.
Yep. Can't get easier.
All right. Question number two for the BU battle. What,
do you want to pick a winner?
No, we're going to do this at the end.
You're going to do it at the end?
That's right.
It's a game.
We're
going to
tally
wins.
It all up and see who won this here battle.
All right. I'm giving Pete 20 points.
And the points don't matter.
22.5. I'm keeping my own score over.
Fair enough. butthead on the IM board who probably wins a Optifo Defo shirt just for the name.
Yes.
What is your number one rule in dirty water?
Am I going first or?
Yeah, you're up, though. Yeah.
Returning champion. Pete,
my number one rule in dirty water, especially water that's about the color of Pete's shirt, is to always fish shallower than I think is physically possible for a bass to be. I mean, that's, and I'm talking that orange brown, you know, just super, super, super shallow water.
Even if the water's cold?
Even if the water's cold, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it really doesn't matter at that point. If they have that low of visibility, they're going to be where they can see something, because they can't see anything at 5, 7, 10 feet deep, in my opinion. They're going to be nose almost out of the water. Yeah, the temperature, Jason Christie proved that to us a couple of years ago at Grand. Temperature did not matter when there's this much visibility. Those fish are going to be just right under the surface. They might be in 5 or 6 feet of water, but they're still going to be just underneath the surface, just because that's really about the only place they can see. Not that I guess I shouldn't say that there aren't fish probably in deeper water, but you're never going to catch them, so don't bother wasting your time.
That's an interesting comment, Ott, and here's why you're wrong. The first thing you're going to do is find clear water. That's the number one. That's the number one scenario in off-colored water situations. You're going to try to find the clearest water, especially if it's cold mud, because that clear water is going to hold a few more degrees. The fish will be a little bit more catchable. Oftentimes it can concentrate bait, and you're going to have some more stable water conditions. That's kind of like an audible, man. I don't know if my answer qualifies for this question, because it was about muddy water, but
absolutely. If there is water that is available that looks better, then yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, compared to pure fresh, just nasty rolling mud, yeah, you want to go to somewhere where you can find just anything a little better. Yeah, you win, Pete.
All right, so we got another one coming in hot. What is your go-to bait when you're trying to get that kicker fish to upgrade your limit?
That big hitter.
Yeah. Get in there.
Well, I guess, is it my turn to go first?
Yep.
All right, here's my answer to that question. I don't change. I often think, I've done this over the years where I've tried to get the kicker fish by pulling a Carl Jacobson and getting out the giant swim bait and doing the, you know, running 50 miles upriver to try to fish flip for a big one. And 90% of the time, I just don't get them. So what I try to do is I try to maximize the fish that I'm catching. And a lot of times that gives me, if I'm catching fish, I feel like I have a better chance of catching a big fish. If I can keep getting bit, that's my strategy for getting the bigger one, is to not make much of a change when I need that kicker.
The ding.
Ding. Yeah, that you're right. You're right on the money, honestly. And what I have learned that more in major league fishing in the past 4 or 5 years, where before I would want to try to do something different. But the event that was a real epiphany for me was we were fishing on Lake of the Ozarks a few years ago. And I went in the very back of this little bitty creek and got back in there. And I went in there in the second period and I caught like 4 or 5 scorable fish on a buzz bait. And I mean, it's in the summer, but it was kind of a little shady bank stuff. Just, I didn't have much time running down through there real quick with a buzz bait, bam, bam, bam. Caught a few pound and a half, whatever fish. And it wasn't a lot of water. There was a place in the back that was 4 or 5 feet deep. And I may have pitched some kind of plastic around, a jig or whatever. But when I went back in there in the final period, I fished to the stretch again and actually went to a drop shot just with a little small hand pour worm. I mean, really picking it apart, trying to catch every single fish in there, and caught another 5 or 6 scorable. I caught probably close to 10 scorable bass out of this little bitty place. The very last fish I caught in there on a drop shot was the biggest fish of the whole day, probably the biggest fish in the whole creek. It was like a 4.5 or almost 5 pounder. And I caught it on a drop shot. So after I burned through this area with a crankbait, a buzzbait, everything under the sun, I caught the biggest fish that I caught out of there on the wimpiest technique I threw.
I mean, so many guys fall into that trap, and I've fallen into it. I know you probably have too. And you know, this is what we're supposed to do,
just
man.
Did it, right?
We get five, and we got to go try to get a bigger one. And yep. And I've done better, and I've won more by not changing. Mm-hmm. It's not to say that you can't win doing that. I mean, guys will once in a while find a, you know, four leaf clover and
swing for the fences
and get that crazy big fish. But for me, it's proven more consistent to do it the way Ott and I are talking about it. But because Ott agreed with me, I'm going to get an extra half a point.
Pete, I feel like you're in the lead right now.
All right, so we got another rapid fire question here, and this is one's going to be where you're going to lead off. What's your favorite finesse presentation?
It has since become the Nico rig just in recent times. It was a lightweight Texas rig was for a long time. A drop shot, even in shallow water, has been very effective for me at times. But that, you know, weighted, wacky Nico rig style has really become just a major, major player for me in recent years. And whether that's with a, you know, a slim worm, like a, you know, a trick worm style worm or a fat one, you know, it just depends on the situation and the conditions that I'm fishing under. But that Nico rig has really, really been a big player. I look at those techniques as I feel like I take a wacky, just a straight weightless wacky rig out of that, because you're not going to fish, at least I'm not, a wacky rig in water more than 5 feet deep, you know, where all these other ones, shaky head, drop shot, Nico, you can fish those out to 30 feet. Mm-hmm. So I feel like a weightless wacky really isn't in that same group, although I catch more fish on it than probably all the rest of them.
And well, I got to agree with that.
Really?
Yeah.
You throwing the Nico now?
The Nico and my version of the Nico, which
is just a Senko.
I throw a Texas rig a lot because I'm always around the junk and the garbage, right. And I Texas rig it, but I tail weight it, and I call it my version of the Nico rig, you know, because it falls the same. But I can be more efficient with it. In vegetation and deeper water. I can fish it in deeper water that way a lot of times. But it is, you know, I hate this about myself is I the drop shot is I fight with it and fight with it. And I don't enjoy fishing that because the weight always gets flung off. Oh. I always got to retie it. My line's always twisted. It's always hanging the other rods on the deck or in the rod locker. I am frustrated with that drop shot. I have been since I started fishing.
I'm with you, Pete. And I love a drop shot, but damn, trying to throw it near a tree.
But I've rigged my when I'm and I've caught a lot of fish in the last few years. Fishing a drop shot in heavy cover, you know, I mean, lay downs and that type of stuff up shallow. But, man, I fish it on an eighth ounce sinker and like a 2-aught VMC worm hook and, you know, just Texas rig my bait on it. And, man, for shallow water, especially the kind of stuff, the tidal stuff that y'all fish, man, it can be super, super effective. But I'll tell you the biggest trick and what you were saying about it laying on the deck of the boat. Get a hairband, steal one from your wife, whoever. Take a hairband, wrap it around the butt of the rod as tight as you can get it, as many times as you can, and then put your sinker under that hairband, and life is good.
There you go. That would certainly be helpful, except for when it's an exposed hook, and I am always getting hung by that drop shot hook.
So here's what you can do for that. It's what I found is I'll take an old worm and I'll just pinch off like a quarter inch of it, and I'll just put it right on the tip of the hook so that when you're taking it in out of the rod socks or whatever, it doesn't hang on the rod socks. It just slides across that one.
All right, sneaky little tip.
Yeah, just make sure you take it off. Yeah. It's like getting on the ice with your skate guards on. Yeah. You know what I mean? It doesn't work out too good. Yeah.
You can miss some fish. Well, I agree with Ott. I got to give Ott bonus points on that one.
Yeah.
we're back to about even, or you still got me by a little?
I got to add it up, but I think I'm in the lead. That's
so okay. we got one more question.
This will be the winner. Or
one
loser.
More question for the battle, but before we go to that, I got a question for you. Do you think that weed this drop shot up shallow on a small worm, would you call that a good way to catch fish behind guys, or if there's pressured fish? We had a question earlier in the show. There's a guy, he's fishing a tournament on the second day of a lake after a derby's going to be on it already, and he wanted to know some finesse techniques to fish behind people. Is that an application you would use that?
Absolutely it is, yeah. Especially for me, that's one that's really good in warm water when those fish are up shallow, but they're just kind of weird. That's absolutely good, but it's good any season of the year. It can certainly be good up shallow. It's just it's a little different look than what those fish see a lot. The other thing I would tell him, if he's fishing an area behind people, is to something that I love to do, and I know Pete does as well, is throw a crankbait up shallow, but throw a small non-intrusive something, you know, it's real, doesn't have a big wide action like a lot of square book crankbaits. A DT4 is one of my favorite baits, and man, I catch a ton of fish on, and it's just got a real tight action for a shallow run of crankbait and comes through cover well. But the good thing about a crankbait, you know, drop shot, it's about putting it in front of the fish, soaking it there. You kind of tease the fish in the body, where the crankbait is about a reaction by bumping it through that cover, coming right through there. So that kind of gives you a 1-2 punch. A drop shot to fish for slower fish that you just need to sit in front of, and a crankbait to try to generate bites with.
That's a cool. Good answer.
Cool.
Is that the last one?
No. That was just a piggyback off of. I actually made a statement that brought us into that. But the last question we're going to go with is from New York, Chris. What's your first bait choice for fast moving muddy water?
That's a very good question, and I'm going to say New York Chris is going to get the other Ott Defoe hat and shirt combo. So be sure to get your info in on that, but. Right, my first bait for fast-moving, dirty water would be a bladed jig, probably a 3/8 or 1/2 ounce, black and blue most likely, maybe chartreuse and white, but that would be my very first thought on fast-moving, muddy water would be a bladed jig, because I can fish it in an eddy where I expect those fish to be. I can reel it, steady and fish it that way. I can let it go to the bottom, and I can kind of pump it more like I would a jig or something, and it's going to have that vibration. Those fish will be able to find it. I can fish it from just under the surface to, 3, 4, 5 foot deep as well.
That's a great answer. So BTC, you're going to have to pick the winner of this answer.
All right, fair enough.
Because I use that's obviously a tremendous answer, but I'm going to go Jason Christie style on you.
Yeah.
And one of my go-to is a big, I guess oversized spinner bait with a Colorado or big Indiana blade.
I can't pick.
And I tell you a story about. My first experience with this, Richland Chambers Reservoir, a Bassmasters tournament years ago, same 20 inches of rain. I went pre-fishing 7 days, never got a bite pre-fishing, cold, muddy water. Came back after the off limits, and I spent the first 2 days of official practice without a bite. And on the afternoon of the last day of practice, on a oversized Colorado bladed spinner bait, I generated 2 2-pound bites off of a slightly clearing pocket that I had found. And that spinner bait moving it, because the reason why I like it, it moves slow in that cold, muddy water. You can really move slow with that bait. The next day of the first day of the tournament, I caught 20 pounds of bass. And I went 7 days without a bite. And then wound up with just a little clue and using that big oversized spinner bait. That can be just a killer on as far as a fast moving boat. It's a way to fish fast, slow, if that makes sense.
I'm going to ask for a clarification on the question before points are awarded on the technicality. Was the question based on just fast-moving muddy water, or was the term cold used in the question?
The term cold was not used in the question.
Okay.
So it was current?
It was just fast-moving muddy water.
Fast-moving muddy water. Can I?
Would you change your answer?
I don't know. It still applies. It still applies. I'm sticking with the big Colorado spinnerbait.
I would.
I just wanted to bust your chops on that. If cold was applied.
Dude, if this was an SAT test, I would get a zero.
I like the kitchen, by the way. I'm digging the cabinets, the range hood, changing the color from the cabinets to the range hood, the dark hood. I'm really digging that. That's what I do for a living, so I'm admiring the shot right now.
So that's the you see the island there.
I see it.
It's dark cabinets, and then the matches.
Oh, wait, and the dark fireplace.
We're here by the
What are we doing with the backsplash there? Is that glass? Glass and marble. Oh, that's beautiful.
Very nice.
Yeah, that's lovely.
What does that say over the fireplace? Happy birthday?
Happy Easter.
Happy Easter.
Happy Easter, yeah. Nice. Yeah, Easter coming up soon. She took her Valentine stuff down today and put the Easter stuff up.
Man, she don't mess around.
Good work out of you, Jenny.
Yeah.
That's right.
I still have Christmas on the cabinet to see the
garland.
How do I point to it? That's garland on the top of the cabinet.
Yeah. All right, it looks good.
I have it all together.
She does blame me for that.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
BTC, I'm still waiting. On that particular question, you got to pick.
I got a tough time choosing. I'm very kind of back and forth on things. I'm a little bit.
I think everybody's a winner.
I love both answers. To be honest, I could see scenarios for both. Justin Kimmel, aka Professional Fishhead, weighed in, and he says, "Pete, no trailer hook, no win." I don't know if it's a personal grudge, but he's awarding Ott the win because you did not mention a trailer hook in these conditions.
Oh, dude, well, that wasn't the question. You got to just assume, man.
Yeah, you got to have a trailer hook.
Were you using a trailer hook on your bladed jig?
I don't on a bladed jig, but I do on a spinnerbait. We got guest appearance.
Yeah.
Andy, we just got back.
There he is.
Andy, making an appearance. How are you, man?
Good. You?
Man, we're doing all right. I've been watching you a lot on the MLF. You're having fun over there.
It is. It's fun, for sure.
How was that chicken?
I drop air. How long did it take you to put that together?
Put what together?
Your backdrop.
What do you mean? He's in Belize right now.
The Lord made that in 7 days, buddy.
I know, man. We're lakeside right now in 20 degree weather. Doesn't it look nice here? all right. Well, so all right. The only one that will make an opinion is Professional Fishhead, and he gives Ott. I'm going to give him 22 points. I'm taking 20 points. I got to add all this up. By the way, JK, it'd be a good day to Professional Fishhead to circulate your resume tomorrow morning. He might be looking for some work.
Jenny just pulled this up here. I don't get two T's. I'm just OT defo.
You're OT defo tonight. OT defo tonight.
I'm like the OT, the new OT fear.
That's right.
Talk about that OTT. Yeah, you know that's me. Right. You
know me. All right. I'm adding.
Yeah, some people were very aggravated about the lack of T there. I enjoyed it. I thought it was cool.
That's good.
Are you ready? I've tallied up the score.
Okay.
I tallied up the score. I worked off of a 20-point system, randomly assigning points.
Right.
And
points don't matter. Nobody wins.
Yeah. I have Ott Defo or OT Defo.
OT Defo.
OT Defo. Coming in at 104.5 points.
104.5, okay.
Which is a fairly good score. And the Dean comes in. You're going to believe this. 105.5. points. I won. I know it's a surprise to all, I'm sure.
Do you know what we call that in Tennessee?
What's that?
We call that a pencil whooping.
A pencil whooping?
Yep. You whooped me with the pencil. I don't think you really did. You just beat me with the pencil. Yep.
I may have unintentionally assigned myself an extra point or two. I'm not sure.
I'm not sure.
I wasn't watching.
Yeah.
But you know, I'm sure.
What's the message board say?
The message board wanted to know if Pete had enough fingers and toes to add up the score.
I see OT's name up there a lot.
The message board said that that Ott was the champion, but
hey, math does not lie. Yeah. There it is. Read it. There's the math.
We didn't wait, baby.
There it is. Winner, winner, chicken dinner. I don't think I'm going to earn $300,000 for my win tonight, though. Is that what the classic purse is? Is it 200, 300? What are we fishing for?
300. Yep, 300,000.
300, geez. All right. Yep. Well, I want to talk about one thing real quick, and I want to congratulate you on this. Man, that's a great show you got. I watched your show for the first time, honestly, this weekend, and I enjoyed the hell out of it watching. I think you were down in Texas.
Yeah.
And you were throwing an Alabama rig, and man, you caught some giants, but the production of the show, of all the shows I watched, I had more fun watching that show.
I really, really appreciate that. Yeah, it is a lot of work, and I hope that shows in the final production of it. But it is shot a lot different, and it took me a while to grasp what we were trying to do when we started shooting those. This is the second season that's airing right now, and to get an understanding, because I was meat and potatoes, catch a bass, hold it up, talk about it, let it go, and move on to the next fish. Was that's the way most bass fishing filming has always been, but this is. It's definitely a different level of production, but it really does show. And I mean, Trevor Gowdy's an excellent producer, and it really is I always tell them I'm amazed when a show comes out and they send me a final cut version of it and how they get what they make out of what I give them. It always blows me away because they make stuff that they take lemons and make lemonade out of it. I feel like they do. They're amazing videographers that we've got. Matt Rissell and Derek Sprager, a couple of the guys that are on most all the shoots. They're excellent guys and really, really good behind the camera. And then Trevor Gowdy, his production crew of editors and stuff that put the shows together are just amazing. So, no, it's a group I'm honored to be a part of.
Man, and it's a great show. I enjoyed it. That's got to be more pressure than anything else. I mean, what if you don't catch a big fish?
Right.
I mean, that's the hardest thing to do.
Absolutely, and it happens. There's some episodes where, a mediocre-sized fish is the best thing we end up with, and that's the reality of it. Every time you go out fishing, it's not going to be a 7, 8, 9-pounder that you catch, so that's – you gotta take what you get, and sometimes you fish 3 or 4 days and you don't catch a big one. It's very how easy that is to do, but that's the cool part of it is we try to go to places where we put the odds in our favor as far as where we're going to go fish. That there's at least big fish there, and trying to go at a good time of year to be productive in catching those, and then fishing in a way where I catch many fish all day long. I only catch 3 or 4 or 5, but if we can catch one big one in a day, that's all I got to do. So that's the neat part of it.
Yeah, I guess that is the good part of it. And do you have any cool places? You went to Texas. What other places can we look forward to seeing you fish?
Yeah, Texas was actually one of my favorite shoots. Most of that was shot on Lake Whitney. Did hit a couple other stops down there, Ray Hubbard and a small lake. I think it was called Fairfield. But Whitney, that was the first time I'd ever been there. Alton Jones Jr. fishes it a lot and had told me about it and how good it was and stuff. That was probably my favorite trip of the year. Obviously, by the size and number of fish that I caught there, it would be for anybody. But we filmed on Chickamauga, which we also filmed on last year, and it was neat to go there the exact same week as I did the year before. And then really compare notes as to how different it was from one year to the next, conditions and that kind of stuff, and the fish caught. But it'd be one or two great shows out of there. But I actually just got back last week from down at Gros Savon in Louisiana. And you want to talk about a fun place to fish, man. That is just an incredible place to go. And then we filmed 5 days, probably averaged a 6 or 7 hour day of fishing per day. And I caught for sure over 250 bass in those 5 days I was down there. So it was a lot of fun. But yeah, there was some great places that are still yet to be seen on the show.
Awesome. Well, I'll be watching, and man, we'll all be watching at the Classic, and we'll be pulling for you.
Thank you.
You know, down there. I wish you the best, and man, we'd love to see you bring home the big trophy.
I appreciate that. Yeah, I'm certainly gonna do everything I can, and it'll be in God's hands, and we'll see how it goes.
Hey, Ike requested that we keep you on here for another couple of hours, if that's cool.
I can set the iPad down and point it at the fire, and it'll be good to go. You can watch the logs burn. That's fine by me.
Ike trying to wear him down? Is that gamemanship? He's trying to tire him out?
Tell him to have fun. If you're listening, have fun out there. It's going to be a high of like 45, pouring the rain. Enjoy your day tomorrow. I'll be sitting here by this fire for part of it. So. Oh, wow. If it gets cold, just come on up here and you warm up. So.
Yep. Eating donuts.
That's right. That's right.
Jenny, yeah. I suggest the gluten-free diet moving forward.
It's just a gluten-free diet. I could use it. I'm getting a little full around the edges, but
please, you're. I mean, we're all going to be rooting for you, man. Good luck down there. I wish you the best. I'm going to let you go enjoy that fire and family, and I really appreciate you taking the time to hang out with us, man.
You bet. Thanks for having me on. I sure appreciate it.
Hey, thanks a lot. I appreciate it, man.
Yeah, thanks, all Brian. Right. Thanks, Pete.
Good luck, brother. We'll catch up with you soon.
Yeah. Thank you.
That was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed putting the beat down on Ott.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Really laid it to him.
I think I actually I gave myself 5 extra bonus points on the second question. I can't remember which question that was.
I think that's the one you actually did good on. No, you did good on all of it. Yeah, it was fun.
The
message board may have disagreed with you, but...
Hey. You know, it's all exposure. You can't outdo the exposure. The fans are fans, and they're going to pick Ott no matter what I do.
That's right.
What are you going to do? But thanks. Hey, thanks for some of the guys pulling for me. But that was a lot of fun. Great information. We're going to take a little break.
Yeah, we're going to give us 1 second to pull something up. So, yeah, go ahead. We're going to take a little break.
Want to once again invite you guys. If you haven't done it yet, come on. Come on over and join us. You can see Ott. You can see Brian Thrift, the greatest anglers in the world, teaching about what they're really good at. It's all waiting for you over there on Bass U TV. Help you become a better angler. Take some of this mystery out of it, Brian.
That's right.
You know, get you out on the water with confidence, no matter the condition. That's what we do at Bass University TV. So come on over and join us, because when we come back, we're opening up the IM board. We're going to be talking to you guys. We're going to be giving away prizes. We got a trivia question. We're going to be giving away a $400 HydroWave, giving away all this, the Tackle Titan t-shirts, Rapala lures, all kinds of cool stuff. Facebook, like us and share us. Get you in a contest to win this cool pack too with a Wego and a lot of other great Storm products. So we're going to be taking a quick break. We'll be right back talking to you guys on the IM board. We'll be right back. Stay tuned.
So let's give him a huge round of applause as Ott goes ahead and talks about jigging with Octophone.
Thank you, Bill. I can't get enough of that. You want to do that again, Bill? You'll do it?
No. Let's go jigging.
No, but hopefully y'all will stay awake during this one. I know we all had lunch, and y'all were wide open this morning, but probably have you got your bellies full now and feel more like nap 30. But no, we'll try to keep you awake this time. But this seminar, when I was talking with Justin, who works with Bass U, actually him and his wife just had their baby yesterday. He's usually at most of these. But when we were going through, you know, different topics and stuff, he was the one who brought up me doing one on jigs, because, you know, I mean, everybody's got a different take. If you ask a bass fisherman, especially a professional, say, man, if you could have one lure to fish all year, all across the country, what would it be? And probably at 90% of us, or maybe even closer to 100, would say, well, if you had to give me one, I would take a jig. You know, I could make it different colors, I can do different things with it, but a jig is really one of the most versatile baits. This last year on the Elite Series, I think I weighed fish on a jig in every tournament except St. Clair. and I think I even weighed a fish or two in on my lax on a jig. I may not have. Tournament was actually one on a jig. Apparently, I should have. But I mean, I think I weighed fish in every single Elite Series tournament except those couple. And St. Clair, I mean, it was smallmouth and offshore, and you could have caught fish on a jig, but it wasn't what I was doing there. But that truly is, and I think that speaks volumes as to just how versatile a jig is. I caught a lot of fish swimming a white jig throughout the year. Last year, we fished a lot of different places and times when there was a shad spawn going on, and that was a good thing to do. I caught them at Okeechobee, flipping a jig some there, and swimming a white jig there as well, and caught them on like a punch skirt rig, which is basically a jig. You really can't say it enough just how versatile a jig is, and that it works from when we started the year at Cherokee and 45 degree water. I caught a couple fish there that I weighed in on the third and fourth days up the river flipping, and you know, I caught them all throughout the year. So it really is one of the most effective and most versatile tools in your box. And it's a few reasons as to why. I mean, it can imitate everything a bass eats. Anything a bass eats in the water, you can match a jig to look like it. From the obvious ones of crawfish, that's when you see a jig, especially a brown jig, you automatically think crawfish. And that is one of the best imitators of crawfish out there. To a white jig, you know, that you fish and looks like bait fish, to one that's got some green pumpkin and blue and looks more like a bluegill for a swim jig, and then a black and blue that I still don't know what it looks like, but they sure do bite it. So that it really doesn't matter, I guess. And again, and you can fish it from the top to the bottom. You can swim a jig right under the surface all the way to, you know, of course, a football jig dragged out in 40 foot of water, you know, and open water or heavy cover. That's whether it's just around boat docks that have hardly anything in the water, throwing a swim jig down bare banks, and of course in the heavy cover that we all like to flip them in and stuff at times. So it'll work in all that. All right, Bill, hit another one. As far as different jig styles, I really broke it down there by the five I could really think of. As far as, you know, you can go to Bass Pro or anywhere and look up different jigs and find all different kinds. You know, this one's made for this and that one's made for that and whatever. So the one that I use most of the time, and this one is really a combination. This is a Terminator Pros jig. And this is designed as their flipping jig, but this is also the jig that I swim most of the time. It's also the jig that I cast. A lot of companies have a jig that is designed just for flipping, just for heavy cover flipping. And it may have a beefier hook than this and a beefier weed guard, but the head is a little bit more rounded shape, you know, something that's got just a different shape to it. Where this one, it's just really a good all-around shape. So for me, like I said earlier, that KISS principle, that's one that I try to do all my fishing by, that keep it simple, stupid. So for me, having one jig that I can do for multiple things, that's a win-win for me. That's less stuff I got to carry in the boat. Just carry this jig in a few sizes and then the colors I like, and that's a big plus. But for a finesse jig, to me, that's always going to be something that's a little bit more specific. You definitely want a lighter wire hook, less weed guard, and that's something that you never fish a real heavy one in. I mean, a half ounce is a really heavy finesse jig. I know Jamie's talked a lot about finesse jigs earlier, but for me, a half ounce is a really heavy finesse jig. Most of that's done with like a 5/16, you know, 3/8, somewhere in that kind of range, even a quarter ounce, which is what this is. And a smaller skirt, you know, a real scaled down kind of skirt, thinner skirt. And then a football jig, which is, you know, a lot the same size as what your flipping jig is as far as just the overall profile of it. But it's got that big head kind of shaped like a football. And, you know, something that you use a full skirt, big trailer most of the time. I like something that's a big profile on that. But it's, you know, got a big hook in it too. So that's certainly a bigger profile jig. But yeah, for me, those three and Terminator, casting, flipping, and swimming, I pretty much all do with that all that jig right there. We're actually working on a swimming jig that's got an inline line tie